The next presenter is
Charles Ready Haynes, to go.
Who's a clinical psychologist and currently on the faculty at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Having worked in the field of HIV prevention while at Stanford University, he is now taking a cross-disease perspective, working on developing behavioral interventions for control of cancer-related symptoms in conjunction with the James P. Wilmot Cancer Center at Rochester, but also maintains an interest in the psychological sequelae of chronic diseases, including both HIV.
Good afternoon. So I'll talk to you about something that's understudied in populations living with HIV, namely sleep disturbance in the context of trauma. So it's kind of a throwback to my earlier HIV work. I want to acknowledge my collaborators from Stanford University and our funder, NIMH. Sadly, I have no financial disclosures to make. So I have four straightforward objectives I'd like to summarize for you: the existing literature on trauma, sleep disturbance, and my outcomes of interest, physical and mental health, and quality of life in people living with HIV. I'll then briefly outline the structure and the purpose of the RISE study from which these data were drawn. I'll discuss trauma and sleep-related findings in our data set, and I'll conclude by offering some directions for future research. So HIV has really been transformed into a chronic disease from a life-threatening disease, and along with that transition, quality of life issues have become increasingly important. So we're looking at HIV no longer as a disease to survive, but as a disease to thrive with. It's really a shift from a disease management perspective. And there are many factors that impact quality of life, physical health being a primary one, but mental health issues are also paramount in evaluating how good someone's life is. I think there's also a theme throughout this conference of focusing on factors that cut across multiple outcomes, so physical health, mental health, and quality of life. And in HIV, we want to look for what are some of these factors. And I'll put forward two of them, one being trauma exposure and the other being sleep disturbance. The rates of trauma exposure in people living with HIV are phenomenal, exceptional. Over 70% of people living with HIV report two or more trauma experiences in their lives. If you look at one or more traumatic experience, which one experience is enough to develop symptoms of post-traumatic stress, it's over 90% of people living with HIV. So the rates are astronomical. And exposure to trauma has been linked with multiple negative outcomes, including faster disease progression, poor adherence to antiretrovirals, and poor quality of life. We really only have a partial understanding of why these rates are so high and what the mechanism is that underlies the link between trauma and these negative outcomes. So it's critical to begin exploring what are some linking factors between trauma exposure and poor outcomes. And I'd suggest that sleep disturbance is one of these factors. We know in non-HIV positive populations, sleep disturbance is linked with a host of negative outcomes, including poor health, poor quality of life, and it's also related to exposure to trauma and to general stress. In samples of people living with HIV, rates of sleep disturbance are very high. Depending on the study, it can be 73% up to 100% of HIV-positive populations report some level of sleep disturbance. And what do I mean by sleep disturbance? I'm really talking about difficulties with sleep onset, so not falling asleep when you want to, sleep duration, waking up in the middle of the night or not having restful sleep, awakening earlier than you want to, and then sometimes they throw in daytime sleepiness as another symptom. These symptoms are linked in people living with HIV with poor disease management, poor antiretroviral adherence, and poor quality of life. But as of yet, there's been nothing linking trauma exposure to sleep disturbance in people living with HIV. And that's where this current study steps in. It's, to our knowledge, the first study to examine these two factors in combination and looking at sort of a cross-section of outcomes in people living with HIV. I have two hypotheses I'll walk through with you. One, looking at how is sleep disturbance linked with a range of outcomes, physical health, mental health, and quality of life among people living with HIV. And two, hypothesizing that sleep disturbance is going to remain a significant predictor of these outcomes, even accounting for the variance due to trauma symptoms and trauma exposure. So participants for this study I mentioned were drawn from the RISE study, which is a larger project out of Stanford University that is recruiting people living with HIV who have a history of trauma. So it's important to note going forward in these slides, everyone who was in this sample had exposure to at least one traumatic event in their lifetimes. And they recruited from four sites around the Bay Area, San Jose, San Mateo County, San Francisco, and Oakland. The sample's 334 people living with HIV, 247 men, 87 women. It's fairly ethnically and racially diverse, with 39% African American, 33% Caucasian participants, and a range of other races and ethnicities. The mean age is about 46. It's a very disadvantaged sample, so the vast majority are unemployed, and about 75% report incomes of $20,000 or less, which in the Bay Area is difficult to live on. The modal education is high school at 33%, and the majority of the participants were gay men. 61% reported a lesbian, gay, or bisexual orientation. Here are the measures that are relevant to this study. Two independent or predictive variables: trauma symptoms assessed by the impact of event scale revised, and sleep disturbance. It was really a brief questionnaire with four items looking at sleep onset difficulties, sleep duration, awakening too early, and daytime sleepiness. And then three dependent variables: HIV symptoms were on a checklist, which rated these symptoms from non-existent all the way up to extremely severe. Depression symptoms, it's a theme. The CESD has come up in every presentation, so here it is again. But this time I looked just at the cognitive and affective symptoms of depression, so not the physical symptoms, as that can get conflated with HIV disease symptoms. And my quality of life measure is the positive states of mind scale. The structure of the RISE study, very briefly, it has three intervention arms. One is a trauma symptom reduction arm, one an HIV prevention arm, and the other is a waitlist control. These data were drawn from the baseline assessment before randomization into intervention groups. There's no intervention effect. And all the questionnaires were administered via audio computer-assisted self-interview. All right, let's look at some results. So descriptives of trauma, the mean number of types of trauma experience in this sample was 7.67, so almost 8. And those are discrete categories of trauma. So childhood sexual abuse and natural disasters, two different categories of trauma. So the average person had almost 8 types of trauma they'd experienced in their lifetimes, so a very highly traumatized sample. The mean trauma symptom score on the IES was 1.6. The IES is not a diagnostic measure, but the literature suggests using a cutoff of 1.5 to cite those who might be diagnosable with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and those who might not. Using that 1.5 cutoff, 53% of this sample might meet criteria for PTSD, again highlighting how highly traumatized this sample is. I won't belabor this slide too much. It just shows a range of different trauma experiences that people reported, ranging from being robbed, the most common experience, down to kind of other at 21%. I will draw your attention. Do I have a pointer? Maybe not. Second to bottom bar, serious illness was reported by 23% of the population, and that's have you experienced a serious or life-threatening illness, which I think underscores the fact that even in people living with HIV, HIV is not being considered a serious illness for whatever reason. In terms of sleep disturbance, 75% of the sample reported moderate or higher levels of sleep disturbance. And then I broke it out by the individual symptoms, and those numbers are lower than the 75% as the overall looks across all four of those symptoms. But about half of the sample reported difficulties with sleep onset, sleep duration, awakening earlier than they wanted to, and being sleepy during the day. There were no differences in sleep difficulties by age, gender, race, or sexual orientation. However, those who might meet criteria for PTSD had significantly fewer hours of sleep and poor overall sleep than those who probably would not based on that IES cutoff score. So there's a strong link there between trauma and sleep disturbance. By varied associations, everything's associated with everything else, as is so often true in mental health studies. I will just draw your attention to the linkages with sleep problems. So more difficulties with sleep was linked with more trauma symptoms, more HIV symptoms, more depression symptoms, and a poor quality of life. So to look at the prediction of the three outcomes I talked about, physical health, mental health, and quality of life, I first looked to see how much of the variance in sleep disturbance was accounted for by trauma with a univariate model, and sleep disturbance was a significant predictor, or trauma symptoms were a significant predictor of sleep disturbance, accounting for 30% of the variance in this outcome. I centered both of those variables to remove some of the covariance, and then I regressed those three outcomes onto, first, demographics, just to control for age, sex, etc., the centered trauma variable and the centered sleep variable, and an interaction term to look at any moderating relationships between those two variables. The demographic factors did not pan out for any of the models, so I don't report on those. Here's a stripped-down table just showing, after step three, how the beta weights looked. So trauma, a significant predictor of HIV symptoms, depression symptoms, and quality of life. But even accounting for the variance explained by trauma symptoms, sleep disturbance is still a significant predictor of all three of those outcomes. And this underscores that it's important to look at sleep disturbance as well, even dealing with a very highly traumatized population. Trauma alone does not capture all of the variance in these outcomes. For two of those three outcomes, the moderating term was not significant. But for depression, there was evidence of a significant moderation. Here's sort of what it looks like. You can see in yellow individuals who had high rates of sleep disturbance, and in light blue, those who had low. At the highest level of trauma symptoms, which is all the way to the right, there's really no difference based on sleep disturbance. Everybody was reporting a lot of depressive symptoms if they had a high rate of trauma symptoms. But at lower trauma symptom levels, sleep disturbance explained who was more or less depressed. So this underscores the importance of looking not just at the two individual factors, but how they might interplay with one another to predict outcomes such as depression. So hopefully I've made the point that trauma and sleep disturbance are both very common issues confronted by people living with HIV. They're both linked with negative outcomes. Trauma symptoms are a significant predictor of sleep disturbance in people living with HIV, but even accounting for trauma symptoms, sleep disturbance is still a significant independent predictor of negative outcomes. And furthermore, they may interact in ways that this study, which is pretty straightforward, can't quite parse apart in predicting variance in outcomes such as depression. No study is perfect. This one wasn't either. The usual suspects, you know, it's a cross-sectional study. It uses a retrospective self-report methodology. It was a convenient sample from the San Francisco Bay Area, which is likely different than HIV-positive populations elsewhere in the country. And sleep disturbance wasn't an inclusion criteria for entering into the study, which really highlights what a huge problem this is, that 75% of the sample had some level of sleep disturbance, even though they weren't selected on that criteria. So in conclusion, sleep disturbance and trauma are cross-cutting factors that can explain physical and mental health and quality of life. They need to be addressed in the complex management of HIV symptoms. Sleep disturbance is treatable. There are great treatments for sleep disturbance, including brief behavioral therapy for insomnia, which have worked with, for example, cancer populations. But to date, no one has looked at them with HIV-positive populations. So fertile ground for further research. If someone wants a K-word idea, there it is. You can cite me. I always like to put in a plug for mechanistic examinations. So the precise mechanism underlying sleep disturbance is really not yet known in people living with HIV. How much is due to disease processes, inflammatory processes, mental health? We just don't have that quite understood. So that's another great area for future research. I'll finish up by acknowledging the many grad students who did an incredible amount of work recruiting this sample, entering the data, cleaning it. Thank you to all of them, my collaborators, the funders, and of course our participants, without whom there would be no data and no study. So thanks to them, and thanks to you all.